you are here, or don't you have anything else to do? Are you really interested in bugs? Well, I just suggested last week that maybe some of the people would like to hear about bugs, because we do hear a lot about art and philosophy and theology and travel and all kinds of things. But sometimes some of the things in the creation are sadly overlooked. My specialty is flowers and trees and birds, and I might say how I got interested in insects. I was a chaplain in the last war, and when we got to the Pacific from Europe, where I was stationed in a station hospital, and one of the dentists was quite a photographer, and he took pictures of insect faces with a close-up scope on a, what was one of these old cameras, you know, Graflex. Just the close-up faces. And I said, well, you know anything about them? No, I just write the Department of Agriculture and they tell me what the insect is. And in Japan, he had a field day in collecting insects, and I helped him. And then when I got back to the States, I had the opportunity to go to the University of Minnesota, and I had to take some extra courses, and I said, well, I'll take one in entomology. I never had a prerequisite in zoology or anything. And I talked my way into that course, and the first exam that had, well, I got 30. I laughed and laughed and laughed. The next one, I got 40. And I said, well, that isn't improving, so I quit taking exams. This business of going to school isn't grades, is it? I remember two girls, Phi Beta Kappa, sitting back of me in a certain course in university, and they cheated. They looked over my shoulder. I fooled them. I went way down the front row. That's how they got the Phi Beta Kappa key. And 40 years ago, I took a course in dendrology, namely trees, and I think the professor was a friend of my father's in Wisconsin. And this was in Idaho, and the guy gave me a C-. I'll bet I know more about these trees and identification than those guys who got A. Grades sometimes kind of a disillusion. But I went in there just for identification of insects, and it was very, very fascinating. And from that time on, I started collecting them. I was a pastor for 35 years, and these bugs helped me very much in my ministry. I don't know how many children had come early to Sunday school and go in my study and say, let's look at the bugs. And so the bug boxes had come out, and there they are just delighted. Then we had a preschool nursery in one parish near San Francisco. It was free 2 days a week, and some of the little people have problems and cry, and then I'd be comforted, and our parish worker was a registered nurse. And the first place they would go into her office, and if the tears kept coming, then they went into my study. And we got the bug box out, and the tears dried up, you know, and everything was fine, and they went back to nursery school. But then some of them started working this deal, so I had too many bug students, so we had to quit that. What are bugs good for?
To feed the birds, of course.
Okay, I have a bird book that was printed about 35 years ago, a beautiful bird book. And every single section that the author on this book, and it's delightful, Birds of North America, everything winds up how many insects these birds eat. That's sheer nonsense. They eat an awful lot of insects, but they do feed the birds. There's no question about that. But you think of insects very often as mosquitoes and black flies and things like that. And why did the Lord create them? Well, I wonder often also. But what are bugs good for? Let's have a few reasons.
To pollinize the flowers.
Believe you me, if they didn't do that, we'd be dead ducks with an awful lot of our crops, wouldn't we? To pollinate plants. Another thing, and I think you've never realized it, bugs are useful to prey upon other bugs to keep them in check. The birds are just, they're chintzy as far as keeping birds, while the Mormons make so much of the seagull eating all the grasshoppers. Why they make a lot about that. But there's nothing compared to what bugs do to their fellow bugs. They keep them down. A year ago you read about the the tussock moth taking care of the Douglas fir tree in Oregon and Idaho. And this spring, the Forest Service was going to go to DDT in Idaho, regardless of what the Sierra Club and the rest were talking about. It was a necessity. They held on, and then they found out that nature settled the whole problem again. And this summer, we had this village overrun with a certain species of bird, the evening grosbeak, that big schnobbled fellow who was yellow and black and white. I think we had 200-300 all the time. We'd be flying around the coffee break circle and everything. And other years, you only have about 15 of them. They're near the Salt Lick and back of Salate 3. But they just had an explosion. 2 years ago, our hummingbirds, they exploded. This year, they weren't so good. 2 years ago, all the stellar jays died here. You haven't seen a stellar jay yet, have you? I haven't seen one for 2 years. They all had a respiratory disease and died, but there are a lot of them left in Oregon, California, and along the coast there. But this is what happens in nature. There are cycles. So bugs are good for this one reason, to prey upon one another. Then you've got to think of Holden Village here. We have a sort of a tradition in our dining hall. You see peanut butter and what on the table? I like our friends the bees. We don't get too much economic good from the bugs, as other things in life, like cereal grain and everything. But that honey is just a remarkable thing, and that would be a lecture or several lectures during the week on just the bees, the social insects that live in large colonies, such as the ants and the builder wasps and that. But in scripture, where do you run into bugs?
The locust,
who ate them?
John.
And when I was a boy, my goodness me, I went brrr, like that. That was terrible, the guy eating grasshoppers. Well, you know that grasshoppers are a gourmet delicacy to many people in this earth. In our mission field in Madagascar and in South Africa, when the locust swarm were the school, that's just like an ice cream truck having an accident and lying out in the street. The kids just take off. And I have yet to eat a grasshopper. I've often wanted them. Every time I catch one, I forget all about eating them. Who is eating a grasshopper? None of you? Well, what's wrong? It's a clean animal. I understand you can buy chocolate-coated grasshoppers. Haven't any of you eaten one of those? That's cheating a little
bit. I've eaten chocolate-covered ants.
I want a grasshopper eater. Well, some of you try it someday and then write to me and tell me how they taste. Maybe you ought to stew them or barbecue them or something like that. But John the Baptist did that. But then there's another reference, a real early reference to bugs.
The ants smothered.
In where?
Go to the ants. The ant.
Well, that's in Proverbs. Go to the ant, thou sluggers, and observe how he toils. We have somebody back here?
The plagues
in Egypt. Now we're getting about 4,000 years ago, approximately. And two of the plagues, and there were 10 of them, weren't there? Two of them were bugs, right? Flies and grasshoppers, or locusts. Kind of interesting. And that's perhaps one of the earliest references that we have in writing about them, maybe, that I know of. In the book of Amos, there's a reference to mildew and rust. And that's the earliest reference that the botanists claim, the prophet Amos. Well, a bug is an interesting creature because it's differentiated from other living things by the fact that it has how many legs?
Six.
So when the children come, I say, how many legs you got? I got two. How many legs your puppy got? Got four. And then I says, well, now bugs have got two more. There's six. And one day a little lad came up the steps to my study, and he, by the way, now is an FBI agent. I hate to meet him. But he came up and he says, Pastor, let me see your spiders. And I says, spiders? They got eight legs. And they're not insects at all. So bugs have six legs, and they have two pair of wings, with one exception, the diptera. Oh, I forgot to bring them. I've got one in the dining room at home. But the flies are in the Diptera family, and that is, classic name for the insects, the last name word is Ptera, P-T-E-R-A, which means winged. And then the surname is always a description of it. So when you get the grasshoppers, that would be Orthoptera. That means leather-winged insect. And the butterfly is, and the moth is Lepidoptera, scale-winged insect. And the beetle is Coleoptera, hard-shelled winged insect. So they're all, and they're all labeled that way. And where was I? Butterflies? Beetles. Let's take the beetles a little bit. They also have three segments to their body: the head, the thorax, and the abdomen. That's all you have to remember. And most of them have an antenna that stick up. Grasshopper has one. And then they have the two pair of wings and six legs, and some of them have a distinct ovipositor, namely the katydid has a sword, a Damascus sword, in the back of the abdomen where the eggs are put into wherever they're depositing them, and there the egg mass goes through there. A bug has no skeleton. What holds it together?
A shell, I guess.
Yeah, it has a shell called, made of, it's a material, very strong material called chitin. The chemists have given this name. And it's held together like that, and so when the bug grows, he's got to molt. He sneaks out of his shell, and some bugs molt 20 times before they reach maturity, some only a couple of times. And you can often find many of these molt, these shells, if you're a fisherman along rocks and streams and things like that. Well, let's just look at the Lepidoptera. That's an interesting group. And that's the scale-winged insect.
We'll draw a bug here first. The head, thorax, and the abdomen. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and here's an antenna, and here's an antenna. We'll put our eyes on them.
They have compound eyes. Grasshoppers have great big thing. No wonder you can't catch a grasshopper. You can't sneak up on them at all. But there are many, many, many eyes in there. They have a central nervous system and sexual parts and everything. It's a fascinating thing about these critters. And they have mouths that are chewing, piercing, and sucking. And a skeeter you don't like. He pierces and he sucks out your... By the way, ladies, do you know that it's only the mama mosquito that bites you?
No.
What is a papa mosquito? Oh, he lives on flowers. you need liberation.
But now, here we have, we better get this set of wings on here.
That's a great exaggeration there. You have two sets in here. Now, the two members of the Lepidoptera are the butterflies and the moths. The butterflies have, generally, there's always an exception to the rule. They have an antenna that's just like a wire, and then you have that little ball on top. And the moths all have a feathery thing. That's a poor, it must go out like that, antenna. And that's your distinction between them and the antenna. The antenna is used for feeling. It's a delight to watch. The beetles are out now. Have you seen any beetles here at Holden Village? In the woods?
Yeah.
Oh, they're interesting. The green ones and everything. Do you know there are 22,000 families of beetles? And they're finding new ones all the time? Do you know there are no 22,000 animals? Another thing, which would weigh the most if we weighed the insects on this part of the scale and weighed all the animals on this side, that's including man, how many billion are there, and elephants and hippopotamuses and giraffes and chimpanzees, baboons, skunks, chipmunks, they're on this side. Which weighs the most?
Insects.
Well, you're guessing that, aren't you? That's right.
Oh, my
goodness. Yeah, the insects weigh more than all the animals in the world. So we sure has bugs. Lots of them. Then the next thing about the butterflies and the moths, well, that's a funny looking butterfly, but the butterfly can put his wings together, can't he? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The moth never has the wings together. There are exceptions to the rule. They're always wide open. And then the very, very interesting thing of a, we'll take this as a wing of a butterfly, and when you pick one up and then let release him, what do you find on your fingers? Sort of powder? That's the dust-like stuff? Those are minute scales. So there you get this idea of scaled winged insect. And they're on there like shingles in a roof. I've got these magnified billions and billions and billions and billions of times too big. That's the way they're on there. And then the most interesting thing is the variations of the color of the wings. There's one butterfly called the corporal. He's got three stripes on the upper wings. Have you seen that one ever? And they are different colors. Then you have butterflies, and there's a moth, that the Iowa moth, that has a beautiful target here of different colors, circles. And if you were to shingle a roof, you'd have to have a design for that, wouldn't you? And this is made by millions of these scales. And you ladies do stitchery and embroidery and that stuff. You know that you have to count, don't you? Right now in our chalet, Pearl is having four or five women up there doing cross-stitching. And they're all humped over and counting and stitching like that. Well, that's peanuts compared to this pattern. And whenever you see design, you have to go and think of what? A mind. Only a mind is capable of making designs and plans. And a lousy butterfly shows you so much planning and that some fantastic mind had to do it. And these two-bit science teachers who go and say that the whole lousy world is a damned accident or a lousy mistake, I don't buy that. And I think scripture is fantastic. How does it start? In the beginning, God. No horsing around or monkeying around. Well, we think that there was a supreme architect and all that stuff around and things like that. No, in the beginning, God, and make no bones about it all. And God said, a mind can correspond. And these other blokes say, oh, a hunk fell off the sun and billions of years and amoeba and all that stuff, and pretty soon a chimpanzee and ape, and that's very derogatory to my ape friends. Because, and I borrow this from a public relation man who's written a fascinating book. He's director of the zoo in Los Angeles. I'd love to meet him. His name is Hunter. And Animals, All the Animals of the World, I think the title is. I've read the book eight times, I think. But on chimpanzees and apes, he said, now supposing that man once did come up from the jungle and lose a hair in his body and walk erect and make welfare, wars, atomic radioactive possibilities, he sure made a lousy mistake because he gets piles. And no ape ever gets piles. You see, evolution, I have nothing against evolution. Evolution is a good word, and I certainly believe in it. But when you get materialistic evolution, you know, and leave God out of the picture completely, you've got big problems. And you've got the same problem of taking a quart of milk and pouring it on the floor. How many quarts will you have to dump in your kitchen floor before that puddle will be the state of Wisconsin? Exactly like Wisconsin, with Green Bay and the peninsula, Door County sticking out in Lake Michigan, and down between Illinois, it's straight, isn't it? You're from Joliet.
Yeah.
Straight line. Boy, that's tough, you know. That milk's got to be a straight line. I'm not asking too much, am I? Okay, then take the wing of a butterfly. How many times you got to throw a billion scales there so you get this coloration in here. It's just baffling. It's just baffling. It is fantastic. The moths are interesting critters because they do something for economic world. And what's that?
To keep the mothball manufacturers in business.
You know, we live in California. We don't have moths. But we used to live in Wisconsin, and my goodness me, that was awful. Getting your sweaters and mothballs and all that stuff. Now, but there's one more thing a moth will do.
In silk.
No, the silkworm industry. How old is that? And it's just too bad about rayons and synthetics, isn't it? What that did in Japan. When I was a boy, we lived in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and the Burlington Railroad at that time went right past our house, a freight line. And every day a silk train would race to New York from Seattle. Had right away over everything, just zoom with a silk train, all from Japan. So I was in Japan there, just at the war ended, where I did see a silkworm culture place where they, this family raised nothing but the eggs of the silkworm, and then sold that to the farmers who let the eggs hatch, and then the larvae would chew away on the silkworm, and then that's the way they made their living. And that all went kaput. And I think I came home with I don't know how much silk lace. I thought Pearl would make draperies out of it, but my goodness me, it's so priceless. I don't know where it is. But anyway, that's what this little moth does. Most of the insects, particularly the butterflies and the moths, they go through what is called a metamorphosis stage. Meta means before, morphosis is form. The form is always changing. So when you say something is anthropomorphic, namely, that is the form of a man, like an ape or something like that. And these stages are all different. So these little creatures start out in the form of an egg. And that becomes a larvae. That's the worm. And that's your silk, your moth, and your woolen goods. And when my grandmother, ach, da ist eine Motte, bingo, kill the thing, was too late. Way too late. That guy's done his business already. You got to get that larvae in there. And the silkworm larvae, I have pictures of them in movie that this family let me do. And they're chewing away and chewing away. Never stop. Night and day, I think about 3 weeks. Just eat like horses. And every day they bring in baskets of that. I'd love to be a silkworm myself because the mulberry leaves are so glabrous and green and refreshing. And then when they're through, then they start spinning. And out comes this secretion, which has a tremendous strength if you look at it from the form of engineering in stress and strain. And that goes around and around and around. And then they immediately put that in water. They don't let the larvae come out in the fourth form. Egg, larvae, cocoon, or chrysalis and butterfly, and then the mature adult insect. It looks entirely different than that worm. This thing's got wings and flies. No wonder they use in the Christian church, in the early Christian church, the symbol of the butterfly for Easter. Namely, here this chrysalis opens out and newness of life, this butterfly comes and flutters out. That's the kind of a cute little symbol. But in silk culture, why, after the thing is through spinning this little house, then they put that in boiling water and they get a strand out and that's unraveled and made into silk thread. I don't know how many go into a thread. In this picture I have them doing all of these processes and then even making the thread into delightful kimonos, and I had a lovely Japanese girl even model a kimono for me. It's kind of an interesting thing. Well, so much for our Lepidoptera. We'll talk a little bit about beetles, and that'll be about it, and then you can ask some questions. I don't know about all of these things. I'm learning all the time. But your beetle is an interesting critter. The outside shell is hard. And you who are in the Midwest, in Iowa area, in the evening when you When do they come out, the June beetles? Is that in June? In the summertime, they hit your screen and go for the lights?
They're used for fishing. The grub worm is used for fishing.
Now, I want to have the adult people, when they bump into your back porch when the light is on, you know, I think it's in June. That's that big fellow. Well, the outer wings are hard, very hard, metallic. You can tap them with a pencil. And then inside is the transparent wing that makes them fly. They're not very good flyers, are they? And there are predaceous diving beetles, and there's water boatmen that swim backwards, and all kinds of them. And the one that you perhaps know best of all is the ladybird beetle. Very beneficial. This little fella is beneficial to the citrus crops in the southwest western states, eating the aphids and the mites. Is that it, what they eat? Anyway, they prey upon something. And you can pick them up about 4,000 feet in the Sierras. I remember going fishing once there, and I wasn't doing so well fishing, so then I immediately go to botany and to bugs and birds, so I'm never skunked when I go out in the woods. And here were ladybugs. They were 3 inches deep. They apparently hibernate or something there. And I have a very close-up picture of them walking on a little stem back and forth. They look like those little red ramblers used to back and forth. And they also bite. They have a ferocious bite. Man, did they get me while I was filming that. I never knew that. And it's a very beneficial thing.
When they fly, the outer cover, the hard cover, is stationary. So it's kind of like a glider, and the little wings underneath it.
Now, he doesn't do a very good job flying, but they get around pretty well. Then we have the engraver beetle. If you go down here, I'll go anywhere where we cut these trees, and you'll see the bark that off of some of the logs, and you'll see the little channels that they bore under the bark, between the cambium layer and the bark. And some of the engraver beetles are identified by the design they bore underneath the bark. And there are so many variations to these things. Then, of course, bugs are terribly expensive to mankind, and so we have this problem of DDT and things. Not many years ago, many kings and queens went to their royal chambers and slept with bedbugs. That wasn't many years ago. Maybe some of you had to be deloused. That wasn't many years ago, was it? And when you live near the San Francisco area, your children, some of your children will be affected by fleas. And a flea has a compressed body, so he can walk right between the hair on your head. He's got a job doing, mine's a little thin, but there's a few up there. But anyway, they go right through the hair on your head. And our younger daughter was very, very, well, insects always bothered her. Mosquitoes and black flies did or murdered her in northern Minnesota. And in California, the fleas got her. And we'd immediately undress her in the bathtub and see if we could find that rascal hopping in the bathtub and clobber him. And she got so bad that she would go to one family and play with the children. And they had a dog, and I don't know, they also had a lot of fleas in that house. They didn't know it. So we even went to our doctor and said, what can we do for fleas for Karen? Because, boy, she'd get big welts. Well, I can give her some pills. And so when her little friend would call her up, come on over and play, Karen. Just a minute, I got to get my flea pill. And Karen would be so embarrassed. Well, that's about it. That's 35 minutes. So the next time you see one of these little creatures, don't step on them. Look at them and wonder at the variation of creation. Boy, what a variety we have in creation. I wish that our government spends a lot of money foolishly. They'll spend $40,000 on what happens when a child falls off a tricycle. Stuff like that. I wish we would have some who would be really endowed for life to study one variety of beetle or a midge up in the Arctic. Who knows what'll happen? What diseases that Just imagine when the lice were around and fleas in the Middle Ages, the horrible, devastating plagues that came. Just awful. But through science and this God has given mankind the ability to open a page and write new discoveries. This is a miracle too.
Fleas don't live on animals.
Pardon?
Fleas don't live on animals. They live in the furniture. And when they get hungry, they jump from the...
Don't fleas? Our dogs and cats have got fleas.
Yeah, I know, but it's just while they're feeding.
Oh, yeah. Now, a wood tick is not a bug. That's an anthracid. It's got eight legs. And if you ever take a course in entomology and identify insect, the professor always will throw a wood tick in the group that you have to identify. And you work like a dog trying to forget to count the legs, you know. But wood ticks drop off of trees onto you. They just, I imagine they must smell you. You must have radioactive sensitivity and they get you, menial thing. Well, that should be it if you got some questions. I don't answer all questions. Maybe you have something to put in.
Are termites classed as a bug?
Oh, yes. Very beneficial.
Well,
how many got termites in your house? Well, if I sell our house in California, I'll have to have it inspected before I can sell it. Because there are termites in California. But what's good about them? You just go tomorrow after breakfast, just walk one block down the road and you'll see umpteen thousand trees and you'll see umpteen thousand dead ones. And the termites work on them. And so here you got all of this here cellulose being cycled back into nature. So they're good. Although I'd hate to have a mess in my house.
Well, now, you tell a termite from an ant by the shape of its body. The termite has no two sections.
No.
It has, from the neck clear to the back end, is one section.
I can't remember. I dug up some wood in my backyard. It was loaded with termites. I stomped them out so fast I didn't even study them.
Even the big flying ants are termites.
Oh, yeah. Well, by the way, ants have wings. That's the way many of them get around. I don't know. Yes, they rub them off. And they only do that during mating time. And the first time I noticed that, I was in the lookout in northern Idaho. I had my cabin on the Idaho-Montana state line. I cooked in Montana. I slept in Idaho. I had my garbage pit in Idaho and my privy in Montana. So, everything was equal. And this was in the days when we had a president whose name was Hoover. And he was a gentleman who believed in economizing. Something that is certainly, that's medieval history, and nowadays, another 10 billion.
Trillion.
Somebody's got to pay for that someday. I'm not boasting Hoover. Hoover's a remarkable man. You Iowa people, stand up and give a shout for him. The only trouble with Mr. Hoover was he couldn't communicate. All his life he gave orders. See, this is a lecture on bugs. All his life he gave orders. When the Depression came, he had the answers for it, but of course he was frustrated there. He'd go on radio, and when he's through talking, the nation felt worse than when he started. And then comes up Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who knew so much, and my friends, he was the savior of the world. And he brought some good things in too, I'll admit. But my father was an arts Republican, my goodness me. I think he took 8 years off his life. But when Hoover was president, the Forest Service, they paid us $63.82 a month. Now these guards you see here, they get a couple of days off every week. We work 30 days a month, 24 hours a day. And there's always 2 months in the summer that got 31 days we worked for nothing that day. And then we generally had a bad fire and we had to work like demons. That was Hooverizing. But I was on this lookout alone for all summer and I saw 15 people. I go 2 weeks without seeing a human being. I never had a finer summer in all my life. And one day I noticed I was invaded by ants. And by 3 o'clock in the afternoon on the windward side of the cabin, the lookout was on a pile of rocks like this on the top of the peak. They were 3 inches deep.
They were in my tea kettle and the stove and the bed and the floor. I squished them all over. They were migrating and breeding, and I couldn't be in the lookout house at all, but fortunately in the evening they'd beat it and I'd sweep about an hour and get all these critters. That lasted 4 days.
Oh.
Most of them must have been termites. Migrating.
There's a farmer that stopped in our place, I live in Iowa, and said that he talked about they were going to import ladybugs from California.
To Iowa, farm. Yeah. Oh, they sell them. They sell them by the courtyard.
For the farm, what yeah. would you be using oh, yeah. them for?
Yeah.
For corn borers.
Mm-hmm. For corn borers. Mm-hmm. A corn borer is that nasty fellow with the stripes in his yellow mm-hmm. wings. He's a rascal.
You said that bugs, insects have central nervous system.
Yes.
Does that mean then that they have pain sensation or not?
Do insects have pain?
You know, if you spray a bee in your window with Raid,
yeah.
and you watch the poor thing writhe around on the windowsill, it just kills me. I'd rather whap them with a fly swat and get it over in one swell poop.
Well, I'll ramble here a little bit, so get me back. How many of you are German? How many of you were brought up with that delightful German nursery book, Strubelpeter? Hans Kuckendelow. Der Base of Friedrich. Didn't any of you have Strubelpeter? The guy who never combed his hair, who looks like some of our kids in the staff, you know, hair all over like that. And he never cut his fingernails. And goggle Philip, he'd sit at the table and he'd always go like that, and he'd pull the tablecloth and the hot soup scalded him to death. And Paulinchen, she was always playing with matches. The last picture you saw are buckles and a pile of ashes. Boy, that's the stuff I was brought up on. And the bays of Friedrich would kick dogs and cats and pull wings out of flies. That was bad. Now then, whether these animals feel this thing or not, I don't know. Quite likely, I think that the sensitivity of the lower forms of life is much less than us. Supposing they would scream in pain, this whole place is surrounded by wild animals. We would hear howling and screaming like mad, wouldn't we? But you never hear that. Domesticated animals. Your dog will howl like that, but no wolf or fox will do that. And I rather think that your insects have very little sensitivity. So step on, it won't hurt
them.
But they do have, they have feelings. I love to throw a wood tick in the fire.
Are there any mosquitoes around here?
Yes. You want some? You just go up the Copper Basin right now and go to sleep. They're about through biting, but about an hour or so ago, life would have been a joy.
Because before I left, they were having a few cases of encephalitis.
Yeah. And we don't have that here at all. But
really
we
have
black flies here, and they bite here. If you go in the woods, they bite pretty well. And they raise a welt. But nothing like in Canada, in the canoe country. Well, you've been very good. It's 7:45. I'm amazed that you would be coming here listening to bugs. I came here in 69, the invitation to lecture on bugs, birds, trees, and flowers, and in the end of August, and we didn't, those days we didn't have too many guests, and I think about 6 or 7 kids would be here, that would be all. And so
about crickets?
Crickets?
Yeah.
A cricket is in the Orthoptera family, leather-winged insect. What makes his music?
No,
they have ears too. Bugs have, and the cricket is a drawing. There's a forget what they call that again. That's how he makes the sound. And I might say the diptera. We should mention that. They all have 2 pair of wings, and the diptera is a, what's that fly? Well, we'll say this is a fly. Next fly that you swat, look at him carefully, and in back of his wings you'll find little things like on a helicopter called halteres, a fine hair with a little bump on the end of it, which stabilizes his flight.
And that one, what's that one fly, the long legs, I just caught in the house, was on a lady's hair the other night, and I grabbed it.
Granddaddy long legs.
What you got? But anyway, there you can see the hall tears very easily without even a magnifying glass. No, we've got to quit it. Paul, Mr.